Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
at... An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Welcome to the Chuck and Julie Show, Truth Straight Up. Chuck and Julie had to take the day off. They had some business things that they had to take care of during this time slot, so they asked me to fill in. I'm Mark Poff. I am your retired detective from the El Paso County Sheriff's Office. I'm going to fill in and talk about some things, what I consider to be the whole common sense. I think Donald Trump stole that from me, about some of the things that are going on. I did a guest host for him just a few weeks ago and talked about Trump and his administration and all the things that I'd like to see him do. I'm going to review some of that stuff. But if you'd like to call in, you can call it 888-627-6008. I've got everything up, so if you put any comments, or I'll try to check to see if anybody raises their hand. But if you're on the Zoom and you want to talk, just start talking. John St. Augustine's going to come on about 3:30. We're going to talk about what it was like to transition from basically working in law enforcement and now working as experts in the judicial system. How we've kind of got a different look at thing, and having seen how the sausage is made, being in law enforcement and then now as experts. But I have to tell you, I'm very surprised. So I created this whole list of the things that, you know, Trump said that he was going to do during his campaign. I was kind of like, okay, you know, here's what Trump, you know, his promises and stuff. And see, most Americans like me, just a common conservative Republican, lifelong conservative, either way, whether it's a Republican or Democrat, about half the things they say during their campaign, you don't know whether to believe it or not. I mean, you're just like, okay, we'll see what you actually do versus what you've actually promised. And, you know, I have relatives up in Boulder and I talk to them occasionally, and they have a much different outlook on politics than I do. And they pretty much just said, Trump's a liar. You know, Trump's not going to do any of the stuff that he says he's going to do. He's just saying whatever you want to hear. And, you know, he's not going to do anything once he's inaugurated or brought into office. Well, I have to tell you, that's probably not what they're going to say right now. They're probably going to say, holy crap, everything he said he's doing, I can't believe it. It's all illegal, blah, blah. It's a coup. That's what they're saying. It's a coup. They're trying to take over the government. Well, I got news for you. Trump's in power. It's not a coup. Because he's already there. He's already in power. There is no coup play. He is in charge, and his team is getting basically in their seats, and they're starting to implement what Trump has promised, the things that he said that got him elected. He's taken it very serious that here's the things that if you elect me, I'm going to attempt to do. And he's doing that. And again, you know, when they talk about the fact that Trump's really not a politician, and he's not, he's still not a politician. I actually think at this point, it's good that he lost the last election. I mean, I hate to say that, because I think everybody's seeing Biden for 4 years in this cluster, whatever it's been for the last 4 years. Trump has taken off with a passion right at the beginning, and he's basically implementing his plan, and he's getting in there. And he's doing the things that he promised. As a businessman, and I understand this, you know, having run a small business now for 10 years with my consulting firm, you know, you have to make these decisions, and your survival is based basically on whether you make good business decisions. You know, as a small business owner, now my decisions are a lot smaller, but it's my livelihood. So I make a decision, you know, do I go buy a new laptop? You know, it's a small decision. But that's money, you know, out of my assets and things like that. Trump, as a business person, when he tells someone, it's like he said, the art of the deal. So politicians, when they promise you something to get elected, that's just to get elected so they can get the job. But as a businessman, he basically says, if you elect me, you know, the art of the deal, if you elect me, I'll do this. And he's doing it. And it's freaking these people out. Their heads are exploding. I always talk about the entertainment factor. I am laughing my ass off watching TV. And before Trump took office, I watched Fox News probably 80, 90% of the time. I have to tell you now, I'm probably watching Fox 60, 65%. I have to turn the channel to MSNBC and CNN because their flipping heads are exploding and it is fun to watch. I mean, they are just like losing their minds. AOC making the stupidest statement, saying, you know, Elon Musk is the stupidest billionaire ever. Well, okay, you're looking pretty stupid saying that. You know, the coup, they can't do this, this USAID. I have to tell you, and I'm jumping around a little bit, I didn't even know what that thing was. And I think I kind of understand this stuff. Look, I had no idea what this organization was. But again, and I'm going to get on the USAID thing, but Donald Trump is a business person. He said, cut the deal. You make me president and I'll do these things. So I went through here, and this is I created a few weeks ago when I was here guest hosting before, kind of what the promises were that Trump. And so I want to go through them again real quick and say, you know, in the war in Ukraine before Inauguration Day. Well, I'm pretty sure we knew that wasn't going to happen, but he's working towards it. I mean, he's going to cut a deal. Just stand by. In war in Middle East, I don't know if you could put a check mark by that, but I'd put a couple pluses. That he's pretty much, he's cut the deal. And you heard Netanyahu said, I think it was yesterday, when someone asked him straight out, he goes, who would you thank more? Who could take the claim of responsibility here, having done to really get that deal through? And he threw Biden completely. In fact, he threw Biden so far under the bus, Biden's old body slid out the other side of the bus. He straight up said it was Trump. And the people that he sent. And that's what kind of got this deal going. Now, it's shaky. We understand all that stuff. But I think you could put a checkbox by that. He's taking care of that. Secure the southern border. Holy crap. I mean, this thing is moving at full speed. Not only is he getting, this is an interesting point for me, and I never really thought about this until this happened. So he has ICE with Tom Homan. He's going after the illegal immigrants to get them out of there. But now he's also sent the military down there in Hegseth to go down there to secure the border. And, you know, what a great statement that Pete said when he said, you've sent us to other countries, troops to other countries to secure their borders. Finally, the military is going to secure our own damn border. What a novel concept that we're actually going to use our military to secure our border. What a concept. Common sense. That whole thing about, he stole it from me, because that's what I always say. But completely, totally common sense. Doesn't it make sense that we would want to secure our borders? And what is Trump, these tariff things, and people freak out over the stupid tariffs. And he said straight up, this isn't an economic thing. This is, I want to secure our borders. And if you're not going to help secure your borders, kind of like with your house, and you want to put that privacy fence up. And normally the common sense thing is you go to your neighbor and say, hey, let's get together, split it 50-50, and we'll build a fence that we both like in between our two properties. And then you get that asshole neighbor that's just like, I'm not spent. You do it yourself. Well, Trump's basically said, okay, I'm going to put up a tariff. If you're not going to help me build this fence and help me secure the border, then I'm just going to put up a tariff. And here's the bottom line is, like he says, we don't need Canada. We don't need Mexico. You still have the tariffs. And I got news for you. If avocados or guacamole and some of our southern our beer from the southern border go up a dime or 15 cents, nobody's going to care. They're still going to just get the stuff. It's not going to impact us. It's going to impact Mexico and Canada, and they knew it. China's going to try to get into the game, but they don't understand. You know, they say they're going to do this tariff 25% or whatever on our energy. It's like, dude, you don't understand. We're about to sell a whole boatload of energy to Europe. So China, you know, you've got all these products you want to sell to us. So if we implement a 10% tariff, okay, we'll make billions and you'll make millions. Okay, whatever. What a deal. So I would say Trump is securing the border. I just, this is awesome. And build the wall. That was another one. We're back into building the wall. We're going to do that. Largest deportation in history. We're on the right step for that. That's probably going to happen. No men in women's sport. What happened today? Talk about current events. Trump just signed an executive order like an hour ago, basically getting bio males out of women's sports. We're going to protect women's sport. We have spent years trying to promote girls' sports in high school, you know, middle school, high school, and in college, trying to build that up to show that we value women as much as we do men for sports and everything. We respect them. We want to create this. We want to give them that competitiveness that men have had for years in sports. We want to give them the same thing. And then dumbass Joe Biden and the rest of his dumbass crew, you know, they just like, well, I'd like to have some really wackadoodle trans males that can't figure out what the hell they are. We want them to go into sports, you know, and feel good about them. No, no. We need to protect women's sports. Promise kept right there. No doubt. The no tax on tips, overtime, and Social Security, working on it. No federal abortion ban. Trump hasn't mentioned anything about a federal abortion ban, hasn't mentioned it. Make the 2017 tax cuts. That's coming. NDEI, training and programs in government institutions. That's a big ass check mark right there. He's absolutely making that happen. Talk about the tariffs. Definitely happen. Roll back Title IV protections for transit. That's part of, I think, what he signed today in his executive order. Definitely promises made, promises kept. Reduce the number of federal bureaucrats and regulations. Wow. That's been interesting to watch. And he's working on that. And one of the things that I think is interesting, I didn't even look, and I should look, how many federal employees do we have? I mean, it's got to be a lot. How many do you think actually we need? When you really narrow it down, what percentage, and you can put a comment if you're sitting here listening, what percentage do you actually think of, you know, of our federal employees? I want to exclude military. Just get that out of the equation. But just the ones that sit in Washington, how many do we actually need? How many of these buildings are sitting empty with people that are sitting at home that are really doing nothing? I mean, just how many are we talking? There's, what is it, 2 million? So we have 2 million federal employees. Do you think we could get rid of 500,000 and we wouldn't even know? Would we even notice? I would be very confident in saying that if you got rid of 25%, maybe even closer to 40%, there may be no impact if you got rid of the right people. Remember what Elon Musk did at X, at Twitter? He got rid of 80% of the personnel, and there was a minimal amount of impact to Twitter, to X. So, wow. What would happen if we got rid of 80%? Now, that might be too much. The key is to get rid of the right people. Obviously, you don't want to get rid of air traffic controllers. There are certain areas where we do not want to touch. But that doesn't mean, like in any company, I used to work for a company named MCI, a telecommunications company. It was actually a pretty good company. Absolutely, I'm taking comments. But just give me one second. MCI used to lay off about 4% of its employees every Christmas time. Now, I didn't like the whole Christmas time thing. But I think you could trim 2 to 4% of any company every Christmas and probably have no impacts if you'd cut the right people. So somebody wanted to make comments. So, oh, Barney.
Hey,
yeah.
Mark, how you doing?
Yeah.
Hey, I wanted to say something about Mark Furman after what I bitch about, but let's just assume that I don't think Donald Trump had a clue what he was doing in 16. I think he came into town now, and he knows all the jerk-offs. He knows where they're at, and they're gone. And quite honestly, we're sick of being jerked off. George W., 8 years, you jerked us off. We put up with Obama's crap. I think this is awesome. What I really want to see is like this USAID department. How many of those freaking checks went out to, oh, let's say Mitch McConnell? And you won't get me to believe for 1 second that Ukraine money that went to Ukraine, it came back to our puke politicians. Some of it did. I'll guarantee it. So I think this is great. He's not. The bottom line, the reason we love this, is because he's not jerking us off and he knows what the hell he's doing. And by the way, you brought up the border. 80-some thousand new IRS agents, and I'm going to reassign them to the border. I wonder how many of those pencil neck little pukes quit because they're going to go to the border. I think it's effing awesome. And I don't know how anybody doesn't want to know where our damn money's being spent. I really don't. You'd have to be a fool. And by the way, AOC, I'm sorry, Lee. I don't even think you're good looking. I couldn't do it. There's no way. You can't shut your mouth long enough. No way. I'll take Elon Musk any day of the week. But can I ask you about the OJ thing? I saw a thing on the other night. Wasn't it Furman that nailed it, that said he was like the third cup on the scene? He thought that it was a Swiss Army knife. It wasn't a sword, stiletto, whatever. And I don't know. I've listened to the guy over the years, and I really got impressed with him because he really does. You know, I guess he said some stupid things about blacks, and that's what I think that really screwed the case up because they put him at the end of the line, you know, when they were testifying. That wasn't the only thing. The cops that took the shoes home instead of taking them to evidence. I mean, some of that stuff was just stupid.
They made
dumb.
Some huge mistakes.
Yeah.
There was some blood. Yeah.
Shek, the lawyer with the DNA, he couldn't get away with that today like he did then. I think DNA was pretty new then, and he could say whatever he wanted, and he made that Asian guy, Fong or whatever, that guy was a good kid. I don't know. I would have to say I get why they acquitted him, because Gil Garcetti effed this up like beyond the pale. Did Gil Garcetti have a law degree?
I don't know. I haven't looked into O.J. Simpson in years, but my personal opinion, my one-liner when it comes to the O.J. Simpson, who I think was guilty as hell, I think what hosed them was if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Yes.
And most people are visual people. And when OJ, I mean, if you handed me these gloves that were soaked in blood, which means the leather's going to shrink, they made him wear the latex gloves underneath. And then I'm sure he did this with his hands and stuff. So when they visually saw that those gloves looked too small for him, you know, I think that probably doomed it. But they made so many tactical mistakes. Yep. And actually, you should stick around for the second half because that's when John's going to be on and we're going to talk about this stuff. But that would be good. But yeah, that'd be a great – maybe I'll see if John wants to talk about O.J. Simpson sometime.
Let me see.
Oh, I think I'm losing you. Yeah, we're not getting you, Barney. You're not getting through. You're breaking up. We're losing you bad now, Barney. So, Barney, hey, thanks for those comments. And actually, I'd love for you to hang around later on and talk with John, and maybe we'll talk.
Don't you like put one of my old? Am I losing you? You're gone.
Yeah, Barney, you're all over the place. All right, are we good? All right, I'm gonna move on, Barney, if that's all right, buddy. So I'm gonna get back to this list of the things here, but. Reducing the government, obviously he's taken that really serious. Drill, baby, drill. I think we're definitely on track for that. Eliminate the ban on exporting liquefied natural gas. Obviously, I think we're going to be back into that with Europe. Get rid of the Department of Education. I want to come back to that one because I was on a school board for 12 years, so I've got some real thoughts about that. End all incentives for EVs. Hell yes. Let the marketplace, true capitalism, work. If electric cars can be competitive, then let them be competitive. If not, it's not fair to cut a break to one automaker and not to the others. So I'm all for that. Fire Jack Smith and his entire team, that's happened. Pardon January 6 people, that's happened. Creation of Doge, happened. Eliminate the climate change scam, that's on its way. Declare war on drug cartels, we've done that. He's done that. Banning child sexual mutilation in all 50 states. I know that's happened. So these are the things that he promised, and by golly, it's happened. So let me go through some of these things. First off, I think Iran is petrified right now because Iran kind of got put down by Trump before. Then Biden came in and just let them go, you know, just go for it. And now Iran's a little concerned that Trump may do some things. He's talked about that maximum pressure on Iran and stuff. I don't think they liked that, you know, 4 years ago or whatever, 8 years or whatever you want to call it. I don't think they're going to like it again. So that's good. I'd love to hear that stuff. I wanted to talk about the USAID. Again, I didn't know anything about this. About they're the ones that were created by Kennedy back in 61 through an executive order to create this to basically be the distributors of foreign aid to get countries dependent on us. I mean, let's be serious. We wanted to get them hooked on the drugs. You got to come to the Americans. We didn't want them going to the Soviet Union or to Russia. So we did this. And I don't have major issues giving out some foreign aid so long as it matches the agenda of the U.S. first, you know, of the U.S. I don't think we should be handing out funds to practice DEI globally. I mean, that's just freaking ridiculous. But they weren't answering. I mean, it's like they were deciding who to give the money to. I mean, I'm still trying to wrap my head around this of the power that think about a company or organization that had millions, if not billions of dollars that they decided where it went or the administration told them what, I mean, and then they were like balking and saying, no, you don't tell us what to do. We control, dude, get rid of them. I mean, how much money can you save there? And then asking all of CIA to resign or quit or whatever. I love that. So actually, I love watching this. I mean, every night in the news, Elon Musk is cracking me up. He's not saying anything. You don't see Elon Musk out in the news saying all kinds of crazy stuff. He's got his act together and he's taking care of business. And one thing you definitely need to know to throw the whole cop thing into this, cops loves the secure border. Cops do not, I don't care who these cops are. And I know you see some cops that say that, hey, we're a sanctuary city. That's what the mayor and the governor or whatever said, bubble. And they're towing the line because they want their jobs. They want to keep their jobs. Cops want secure border. They do not want to deal with illegal aliens. They're a pain in the butt to deal with. You know, even if they're, if you want to call them law abiding, which they're not because they broke the law sneaking into our country. But the whole secure border thing, just give that some time. If we can shut that down now that Mexico says they're going to send some troops, I'm very excited to hear, you know, see how that plays out. If they're going to secure their side of the border, I just want to see how that's going to play out. So the main thing that I wanted to talk about before John comes on here, and actually supposed to be in 7 minutes, but I may go over on this, is I was in law enforcement for 17 years. Now, I actually was in numerous professions, and I love that. I love the fact that I changed. When I first got out of college, I was a computer engineer. I wrote code. I set up computer systems for all kinds of companies and stuff. I worked for a large computer manufacturer, telecommunications company. I had a lot of fun for about 20 years. Great time. And then I was like, I want to do something else. So then I jumped into law enforcement and wow, how much fun was that? Best job I have ever had. It's a very rewarding profession. And so then after that, I transitioned into being an expert witness. And it really worked out for me. But I've interacted with the FBI back when I was a cop. And John and I are going to talk about that transition here in about 10, 15 minutes. But let's talk about, I've been watching this stuff with Kash Patel. And again, the entertainment factor. He is making their heads explode. And when you talk about his podcast, and I saw that, his where he says, he obviously says it, you can hear him say it, where he says, I would shut down the Washington headquarters and turn it into a museum. And then if you listen to the whole thing, though, and then he would say, I would get all those agents out in the field fighting crime. And when I heard that, I was like, of course. He's on a podcast, just like I'm doing a podcast right now. I could say some crazy things, but I'm making a point. His point was the FBI doesn't do anything. And I agree with him 100%. I've worked with FBI on multiple cases. I'm not going to sit here and say they're lazy. They're arrogant. And FBI, of all the federal agencies, I'd like to say they do the least. Because there's great FBI agents that are very motivated and do a great job. But the bureaucracy in the FBI is very politicized. What they work on, what they decide to do, what they don't decide to do, they're a waste of money, period. And that's what Kash Patel was saying in that statement. Obviously, a multi-story building, the FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C., you're not going to turn that into a museum. He was being sarcastic in his statements, saying, you know what? I want to get all the people out in the field fighting crime. Could you imagine if you took 10,000 agents and actually got them all out in the field? Now, there's a bunch out in the field right now, but get them out of the offices. They're all just going into offices, and they're like having coffee from like 9 to 11. Then they're going to lunch from 11 to 1. Then they're coming back and taking a nap. And then they're starting to read their emails, and then they go home at 5 or 4 or whatever. It's very hard to get the FBI to do any work. They work incredibly slow. You know, I work on a case in weeks, and they take months, if not maybe even a year. And I've given them cases that I could have had done in a few weeks, and they literally took 6 months to do anything. So when it comes to this whole federal bureaucracy, it's a complete waste of money, time, and resources, and energy, whatever you want to call it. So when Kash Patel makes this statement, I'd turn that into a museum, and I'd get all those agents out and fighting crime. He's making a sarcastic statement to make his point, is get out of Washington, D.C. All of our federal bureaucracy is all based in Washington, D.C. What a complete waste of a town. And that's why the whole town is made up of liberals, because they have this cash cow that they've created. And even when Republicans get in every once in a while, they can't mess with that cash cow. And Trump's doing it. He is diving in with both feet, or whatever you want to call it. And he's getting in there, and he's trying to bust this system. So there's 13,000 FBI agents. Now, here's a point that I found very interesting. Is DOJ asked for a list of every agent that worked on the investigation basically against Trump on the January 6th and other investigations all around Donald Trump. Now, you first think, oh, is he weaponizing the DOJ? No, you know, he's looking into this matter, and he has the right to do that. So the response was about 5,000 employees for the FBI worked on going after Trump. Going after Trump. You talk about weaponization, 5,000 out of 38,000 employees, that's 13%. So for 2 or 3 years, longer than that, 4 years, the FBI had over 10% of their resources dedicated to getting Trump. Is that how we want our taxpayer dollars working in our federal government, is going after a political rival of the current system? That is weaponization of the system. And I will tell you this, because I was asked to look into a CBI agent when I worked as a private investigator. They asked me to look into and get some information on a CBI agent here in Colorado. So I started making a few inquiries. Well, of course, as soon as I made some inquiries to get some information, it got back to this agent. So what does the agent do? He calls me up and starts trying to intimidate me, saying, well, hey, why are you investigating me? If you want to talk to me, you come talk to me. You don't go out there and start, you know. So it's funny that here an organization like the FBI and law enforcement itself, they are extremely arrogant from the standpoint of, I investigate you, you don't dare investigate us. That's not how it works. So The FBI is the same way. So what are a bunch of these agents doing? They're suing to keep their names out of the press. They don't want people to know that they worked on this lawfare going after Donald Trump, and they don't want their names out in the open. I got news for you, man. That is public information. Who works for the FBI, what cases they work on, that is public information. You can't keep that secret. What cases I've worked on as a detective with the sheriff's office, you get to know who's working on what investigations. But isn't it interesting that these FBI agents are starting to run for cover because they don't want to be investigated? So let's talk about, let me see if I can Yeah, that's interesting too. But man, you mentioned cutting Social Security and Medicare. There is so much fraud, but you talk about cutting that and everybody's heads explode. So let's talk about the different federal agencies we have. Obviously, we have FBI. They're tasked with doing federal criminal investigations. Then you have the Secret Service. They are for protection, dignitary protection, and counterfeit money. ATF, firearms, used to be alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, but nobody really cared. There's not many bootleggers and tobacco runners or whatever. I mean, that. So it's basically firearm stuff and fire stuff and stuff like that. DEA, drugs. HSI, actually postal inspectors, they do mail fraud and child pornography stuff is what they kind of go after. Then I started to know this right about the time that I retired. Homeland Security, HSI, they're supposed to be agents that work on the security of the country. Greeley, Colorado has a branch for HSI, has a task force out of Greeley, Colorado. Why do you need HSI agents in Greeley, Colorado? Is there a lot of homeland security issues in Greeley, Colorado? So here's the thing. Whenever you create another federal law enforcement agency, they all want their same toys, and they want more agents. They all want to grow their empire. They all want the same toys. So let me give you an example. Child pornography. And everybody hates child pornography, and I get it. I investigated child pornography for 10 years when I worked with the sheriff's office and put some bad people in prison. I get that. As a local agency, that's what I did. So do you know that almost every one of those agencies all have individuals slated to go after child pornography? So you have the FBI going after cybersecurity, you know, child pornography. Okay, I get that. Maybe there's some federal cases. I get that. So why does HSI, they have a whole bunch of people going after child pornography. Secret Service has a division or a unit going after child pornography. I don't know about ATF or DEA, but they all of these agencies, to include the postal inspectors, they all have forensic examiners, people who go through computers, cell phones, digital evidence. So they all get their toys. They all get all this stuff. And I'll give you one example of another thing where there's a complete waste of money. It's a thing called Triggerfish, I think, or Stingray or something. Is that right? This is specialized, supposed to be hush-hush secret equipment that the feds have that they basically can drive a truck around and it impostors a tower, a cell tower site, and they can find people. So literally, if you have your cell phone turned on, they can use this equipment and drive to your house. I mean, literally, they will drive to your house. This equipment is very expensive, very specialized, requires highly technical and trained individuals to run this equipment. Every one of those federal agents or federal agencies all have numerous of these vehicles in every state. So you're talking about up in Denver right now, the FBI has some, and Secret Service. We used to use Secret Service. That's who we like dealing with because they were nice. You know, we liked who we were dealing with. So they all have this Triggerfish system that's supposed to be hush-hush. What a waste of money. Why don't you just have, well, one thing, why does Secret Service need this equipment? Why don't you just say FBI will train their personnel to run this equipment? We'll have one, you know, in Denver, a couple, you know, whatever. So you don't have all this duplication of effort, money, whatever. You don't have multiple people from different agencies trained. And also, I am all for the federal government and local going after individuals creating, distributing, and having child pornography. Why is the Secret Service doing that business? Why is Homeland Security? None of their damn business. And I'm not saying it's not an honorable thing to investigate. Secret Service should have two jobs: protect people and counterfeiting. They should do nothing else. ATF, go after firearms. DEA, go after drugs. Homeland Security, get rid of them. I mean, I don't know why you even need this branch, or I don't even understand this. They're everywhere. And what they're doing is they're all creating these task forces to get local law enforcement to work with them. So they create a task force. There is a whole boatload of these HSI task forces everywhere. And then they will deputize. They will give them federal badges. And then they'll basically, you work for us. This is a takeover of local law enforcement by the federal government. And they need to just, Trump could wipe out HSI. And everything that's being investigated by them is already being investigated by another federal organization. So this is another thing that I hope that they look at and they can wipe out. I just wonder how much waste that we actually have. So I do want to touch on this a little bit. John's probably, he's there, but John, just hang loose. You told me to talk as long as I can, so I'm going to. The Department of Education, I want to finish up with this. I was on a school board for 12 years, Lewis Palmer School Board. Always, well, when I was on the board, we were always top 10 in the state of Colorado. I was very proud of our graduation, on-time graduation rate. I never can say that right. All kinds of stuff. We had a balanced budget. We were fiscally responsible. I wish we could have paid the teachers more, but we didn't tolerate any of the DEI stuff or any of the propaganda. I made it very clear. I wanted all politics and all religion out of our schools. Now, some people might argue with me. I'm a man of faith. Say, wait a minute, we should have, you know, religion in the schools. No, we shouldn't. Because if you have religion in schools, you got to let them all in. And then where does that slippery slope end? So I made it very clear that I wanted it all out. Let the kids figure out their own religious beliefs, their own friends, their own politics. I was a school board president for a while. I believed in school choice, but I was the school board president of the public schools in Lewis Palmer. So I was basically, when it came to charter schools, go do your thing. If you need some help, if you need something from us, let us know. But that's what a charter school's goal or choice is, where they say that they can do a better job for less money. Go do it. I'm all for it. And if a school district is failing, then by all means, get charter schools in there, because you only have one opportunity to screw up a kid's education. I don't care about public education from the standpoint of like hurting our feelings. You've got to educate all the kids. I used to always say when I was running for school board, you measure success one child at a time. Some kids do better in charter schools, some in other. I mean, that's the key, is you try to have competition and you try to cater to the kids to give them the education. That's why you have trade schools and stuff, so you can do the best for each individual kid. Trump's talking about getting rid of the Department of Education. This is how I look at that. I donate money to charities, and I want to know what percentage of those of the money I send actually make it to the charity. I right now have two of my primary donations, nonprofits. Tunnels to Tower. Obviously, I'm very excited about that because I'm a retired cop. My dad was a vet. He was a colonel in the Air Force, so I am all for Tunnel to Towers, and 90-some% of the money makes it all the way through. I like their commercials. I like what they do. They're getting my money. The other one that I just started up this year was Samaritan's Purse. Didn't really check to see what percentage, but I've always liked Billy Graham, like Franklin Graham. Love to have their money. But to me, what percentage of the money that you put into this organization actually gets out to the people that you want to help? We should have the same requirement for the Department of Education. How much money that we give, let's say we give them $1 billion, how much of that $1 billion actually gets out to all the schools, teachers, whatever, to help educate kids? Well, I would tell you the Department of Education is a complete and total loss. It's not working. It's a complete and total failure. So there's no impact to the students in the United States if you were to abolish and get rid of the Department of Education, split up the money, and gave it to all the schools. I mean, I agree with Donald Trump 100%. Let the states run the schools, period. Get rid of this monstrosity of a bureaucratic waste of money that everybody, there's people sitting in the Department of Education making boatloads of money that are doing nothing to help kids in their education. So I agree with Trump completely. As a retired school board member of a public schools, the whole 12 years I was on the board, the Department of Education did zero for us. Zero, other than give us unfunded mandates that we had to live up to. They cost us money. They didn't give us money. So that's all my stuff, man. I talked forever. John, you're probably fired up that I did that. If you could bring John on, we're going to switch this up because John doesn't want to talk politics. I say this every time, but I just got a few questions for John. We got about 15 minutes. Are you out there, buddy? If you unmute and bring your video on, if you guys could bring him in. There we go.
So, I say you keep talking about your politics. And then
Just a common person. I believe in common sense. But I tell you, I love the way things are going right now. Interested to see how it all falls out. So John and I, and we've been so busy. And I just got asked to do this on Monday. And I was like, look, I'm busy. I'm teaching Monday morning. I know John's swamped, but I'll do it. I know I'm free at 3 o'clock. I literally drove up to the house, came downstairs, and fired up the Zoom. So we really have nothing to talk about. But then I thought of something that we can talk generically that I think is pretty interesting, is the fact John and I were both in law enforcement. Interestingly enough, John and I were both engineers, software engineers, right, John? I mean, that's kind of...
Software and electrical, yep, for me.
Yeah. So we had a technical background for years before we joined law enforcement. And then we got into law... I think it's the love of the game, if you want to call it that, of law enforcement. But both of us had about 17 years in law enforcement. And then we've transitioned for the last 10 years. John and I have been experts, and we've really seen our business increase. At first, I think defense attorneys were kind of hesitant to want to hire us because we were former law enforcement. Now they love us because we give them the inside scoop. They call us up and say, hey, look at this case and tell me what I have, especially John. John is an expert on this. They love him. I have multiple attorneys call him up and say, dude, John is amazing to go through a case and see how the cops screwed up. It is fun to watch. So I just wanted you to talk a little bit, if you could, about that transition from John was the commander of investigation. So he headed up all of our homicide investigations, all of our major cases that I was involved with. So I was kind of the detective actually solving the crime. He was the one bringing me coffee. But now for 10 years, we've worked as experts, predominantly for defense attorneys, looking at cases and stuff. So what do you think that you've kind of transitioned that has changed in your thought process?
I think the biggest thing for me, Mark, is it's not really about the truth. You know, when you go into law enforcement, you know, you think you're just doing everything for the good of the order, right? For the community. And you think that everybody is aligned that way, right? That we're all trying to put bad guys away, right? That we catch the criminals, we put, you know, the rapists and the murderers and, you know, the burglars and the robbers all away. And to a certain extent, right, that is true. But, you know, what I think is probably the biggest thing that I've seen in this transition is that it's not really about the truth. It's about wins and losses and at the expense of people's lives. And, you know, if you do any work for the defense, and I'm sure some of, you know, Chuck and Julie's audience is probably very much pro-law enforcement, which, you know, I'm pro-blue as well in certain aspects, but I'm more pro-truth than anything else. And, you know, when you start to work for the other side, right, you start to get this perception that you're working for the dark side and that you're willing to, you know, to essentially do anything to defend somebody who's done some type of crime. And, you know, I'm here to tell you, you know, that's the farthest thing from the truth. And you know, furthermore, you know, people that were in law enforcement that I knew very well during my career in law enforcement, you know, started to alienate people like you and me. Now it was, you know, they've lowered their moral standard or their moral compass. Now they're willing to defend, you know, somebody. And it's not about defending, it's about accountability. And I think that's what people don't understand is that, you know, whether you charge somebody with murder or you charge somebody with, you know, whatever crime, there's accountability on both sides. It's not just the person who committed the crime, right? Did the cops do what they were supposed to do? Did the prosecutors do what they were supposed to do? And what I'm finding out, Mark, is that, you know, what people do is they draw a line in the sand, and now all of a sudden we're the enemy and they're the ones doing the work of God. And being right. A man of faith, it has nothing to do with whether you're doing the work of God. It's whether or not you're doing what's right. Right. If you're working for the prosecution, you're seeking justice. If you're working for the defense, a defense attorney is supposed to defend their client zealously. But from an expert standpoint, you and I are just supposed to provide an opinion based on facts. Well, what ends up happening is when they don't like the facts that we present, they then attack the individual, right, who's presenting
those facts. We've seen that.
And that's the unfortunate side that I'm seeing. You know, I was good enough to testify for the government when I was working for the government. But now that, you know, some of the cases are against the government, now all of a sudden, for some reason, my credibility has diminished because I'm no longer working for the government. And now I'm working for, you know, the dark side. And so, you know, that's probably the biggest thing that I've noticed is that there is this, I know, all of a sudden change in how they view people like you and me. You know, it's almost like we're a hired gun willing to say anything on behalf of a client. And I will tell you, there are many, many, many clients that I have made the recommendation that this is not worth going to trial. That if you plan on calling me to testify, it will not be helpful to the client. In fact, it would be more helpful to the defense. I mean, excuse me, to the prosecution. So, you know, it's a challenging deal. And, you know, anybody who's looking to go into this, you know, you got to have some thick skin. But it's not, like I said, it's not about the truth anymore. Now it's a matter of wins and losses. And it really shouldn't be like that. But unfortunately, that's probably the main thing I've seen over the last 10 years is that, you know, the prosecution wants to win. They want to put people away. And if there's evidence to support somebody's innocence, they're not as eager to drop or dismiss charges unless there's a big fight. And, you know, then maybe they'll consider it. But, you know, what they end up doing is attacking, you know, you or me as to our findings. And that's troubling because, it, you know, it's one thing to question the results. But, you know, if you're doing forensic science, it means it's repeatable. You know, if you're looking at a cell tower, you can say that that call detail record came from that tower and that antenna. That can be repeated. You know, we're not on the stand saying, hey, it came from this tower and antenna that doesn't exist or, you know, making up things. It's all based on facts. And unfortunately, you know, I don't think the other side quite sees it that way. I think they see us as sleazeball experts who are willing to testify for compensation, you know, on behalf of somebody who's been accused of a crime. But there's no presumption of innocence, Mark. Let's get to the bottom of that. I mean, anybody who thinks in our country that there's a presumption of innocence, you can look at it at a local level or on a national level. When somebody is charged with a crime, the immediate conclusion for a lot of the community, the majority of the people, is that that person's guilty. They're guilty of something. Why would the government go after them?
Correct.
And that's the hard.
And they don't put innocent people.
Right. They don't arrest innocent people. That's correct.
But I would tell you, we have definitely, both of us have seen people that were completely innocent, had nothing to do with what they're being charged with. Is it common? No. Is it rare? Yes.
But I guess, and sorry to interrupt you, I would then tell you this. Is it worth one person being put away who didn't do a crime? I mean, for me, one time is too many. And unfortunately, you know, you can go to a police academy for 6 months and you can violate somebody's civil rights and do things to them, you know, and it's your word against their word. And guess what? Their word is going to be held at a higher level than our word. You know, and again, it's not a matter of whether you're pro-law enforcement or not. You know, I'm all about putting bad guys away. But you got to do it with some type of integrity and accountability. Right. And that's the part that I think is missing.
And they definitely, one of the things that kind of surprised me, like you, I have testified numerous times as an expert for the prosecution back when I was a detective and even after that. And now it seems like they question my integrity. Like they almost make it sound like, well, you're making this up. You know, I mean, they don't say that. But they suggest that, you know, why do you get a different outcome than our cops? Well, that's because your cops or your experts are making statements that are not legit. And okay. And they've never been challenged before. You know, so they're not used to someone getting on the stand and saying, wait a minute, I was a cop for 17 years. I'm telling you what they're saying. That's not as accurate as what they're making it sound, you know, to be. And they get very defensive. You know, I told you one time I had a prosecutor when I started talking about this exculpatory, you know, evidence and the thing showing that, you know, maybe this guy's not guilty. And she said, why didn't you just call me up and tell me that as the prosecutor? You know, I could have just dropped the charges. And I'm like, yeah, right. You know, okay, drop the charges now then. You know, right now, do a motion to dismiss. Again, it's not about getting to the truth. It's about winning and losing. And the prosecutors need to focus on, you know what, when our guys are wrong, especially when we talk about digital cases or digital evidence, cops don't understand what they're doing. They don't understand this newer technology. They make mistakes. And they are definitely right now putting innocent people in prison. And not only that, innocent people are taking deals. Right. Innocent people are actually saying, look, this is so overwhelming. I could go to prison for 10 years or I can take a probation. And so that's because the prosecutors know their case is weak, you know, and then so they just want to get, again, closure, a win. So this person takes probation and now they're a convicted felon and they did nothing wrong or they massively overcharged. You know, somebody does make a mistake. And then they charge him with all this stuff, and it's so overwhelming. It's like, guys, can we get back to what it is I actually did wrong?
Right.
Instead of these 10 other charges that are just crazy.
Exactly. You know, and that's the other part is they leverage their power to you know, create more charges. I mean, you know, how many times have we seen things where we go, you know what, those three or four charges seem legitimate, but the extra 10 or 11, like, that's over the top. And right. Look, you know, if it meets the statutory requirements and you know it meets the elements of a crime, then hey, you know, you charge them. But you know, it's gotten to a point, Mark. You know, and this isn't a matter whether you're right wing, left wing, middle of the road. You know, this is just a matter of these are people's lives, and people's lives. You know, if you're going to send somebody away to prison, like just do your job, like do your job. Right. And if it's something that you don't have the expertise in, like you're mentioning about digital evidence, you know, you and I are from a very unique background in that we had technical background before we got into law enforcement. Most people that go to college to become engineers don't go become cops. Right. They end up working as engineers. And so, you know, to try and train a police officer on how to be, you know, a technical expert in something that requires a whole lot more training than going to a 2-week school, you know, that is sponsored by somebody who says, we're going to make you an expert in a certain field. It can't happen. But yet these individuals, you know, go out and they make arrests. And, you know, again, they in a lot of cases, they really don't understand the dynamics of what it is they're testifying to. And the government endorses them as an expert. And you know what? Guess what? Our lay people, they trust law enforcement. They trust the government. Right. So when they present cases like this, a lot of people inherently will go, no, why would that police officer lie? Why would this police officer not tell the truth?
Right. They have no incentive to lie.
That's right.
But maybe they're just the benefit of the doubt. Right. Maybe they're just not informed. And one good thing, we're going to have to close it up here in a minute. But
sure.
So you just told me here recently you had a case where an individual was falsely charged. You explained to the district attorney on how they had messed up their digital investigation. You finally got them, you know, and they agreed, yeah, you're right, this is bad. And they dropped all the charges. And then the cop did it again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Mark, this was...
Did the same thing again.
Same thing again. And it's the Lisa Chase matter. The officer involved in the Lisa Chase matter where, you know, this, for those of you that don't know this case, it was a lady that was arrested 4 times in 80 days for a crime she didn't commit. For crimes she didn't commit. And the same officer involved in making the arrest of Lisa Chase made a subsequent arrest of another individual who also did not commit the crime. But, you know, here's what happened. You make the arrest, the person who's being arrested, their life is turned upside down. It's not just financially. you know, the emotional toll, the physical toll, the stress all involved with it. And then more importantly, their livelihood. How do they go back to work when they've been charged with certain crimes that they did not commit? So, you know, again, I think the message here for me is it's not a matter of whether I'm anti or pro-law enforcement. I'm pro-truth. And if you did a crime, you deserve to pay the consequences. But if you didn't, right?
Then we need a system that's fair.
That's right.
And right now, I would tell you it's very one-sided. Not fair for everybody.
It's very one-sided. So, it's who has more resources.
Right. Yeah, they have tons of resources. So, you know, again, we just had this one little thing to talk about. We just talked about 15 minutes about this, and then boom. Mm-hmm. So we do need to, we filled up our time slot.
Okay.
So we need to let it go. And, you know, I always love doing this and stuff, and we have cases that come up. We just want them to get adjudicated so we can talk about these different cases. But this is the one thing I'll leave it with. And thank you, John, for helping or coming and joining the podcast. Mm-hmm. Don't assume the cops got it right. If you sit on a jury, don't assume that, you know what, we got to find him guilty of something because obviously he had to do something. So be skeptical. The cops can be wrong. So everybody have a great hump day. Chuck and Julie be back on Party Friday. I'm sure they'll have all kinds of great stuff. Again, thanks, John, for coming out. And we'll all see you next time we guest host.